This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, in beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth. We come to you once a week here from this fair domain to enlighten your musical life and guide you through chaotic modern music times. Discussing entertainment, business, and all things pertinent to the musician or music fan out there trying to make their way through these chaotic waters. We are the P2 Podcast, the lighthouse in the fog, as we like to say. And joining me here, as always, or as much as we can get him, he's hard to get booked these days, Kurt South is here. How you doing, South?
Thank you for the applause. Thank you. I didn't know there was that many people.
I know. We got people in here.
The studio audience.
Studio audience today. Yeah, I told him, you should have seen this place. It was just a flutter. You know, when Pat Green came in here.
Oh, yeah.
Gary P. Nunn's coming on the podcast. Nunn kind of comes down here. A couple of the guys are, hey, I want to go meet Gary, you know. And very, very cool. But, man, when Kurt South comes here, the place is a buzz. Just a palpable energy.
Pat
just
Green actually ripples. Showed up. He's like, hey, you think you can get me a few minutes with South?
Yeah, I told him. I said, man, he likes to work alone. He likes to be in there alone. Not have anyone bothering him.
Green is staring through the glass at me right now, just with a hopeful expression. Will he come out and speak to me in a minute?
You know, I think that's the janitor here. I don't know. I think that's Pat. I'll have to go ask
him. I'll be out in a minute, buddy.
I'll have to check that guy's laminates, make sure he's permitted to be in here. How does the summer find you so far? Well, the heat's kicking up. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
You're not a big fan of the heat?
No. And those of
who
you
who is a fan of the heat?
Well,
people who used to live in Minnesota.
I meet these people quite regularly. I love the heat. It's better than being cold. No, it's not.
See, when you're cold, I always say you can get warm. When you're hot, you're screwed. That's
nothing,
it.
You can't peel layers of skin off.
No.
I tried that last week. I mean, you can't run around nude. I've tried that.
You've tried to run around naked with minimal success. Wait a minute. Have you tried, though, getting naked in the heat and then dumping a cold beer on your head? You've tried that, too.
Most Sundays at Fred's.
That's what you do.
Yeah, it's awful. I can't stand it.
Beating the heat, man.
Oh, it's awful.
Man, you know what gets me about the heat, man? It's just the outdoor gigs. I know they get you, too.
Oh,
but, man, Lord. You just can't get – it's not so much the heat. The actual being hot on the stage is just afterward. And you get in your car, and you're trying to load out. You're trying to get to home, and you get to the next gig. And, man, I can't get cooled down. I can't get dry. My jeans are soaked.
You know what
the air's blasting in the van. I'm just like, dude, I can't get dry. I can't get dry. I have to towel off, change clothes. I'm just like, oh, it's just miserable.
You know what I did for the first time ever this past weekend?
What?
I wore shorts.
Oh, come on.
I did.
What an outrage.
And I will never do it again, but
okay.
I did it. But I did
good
it.
To hear. What pushed you over the edge?
I know.
Well, I wore a short sleeve black shirt with my jeans and
boots. You got to get rid of the black thing in summer. That's just nonsensical.
Dude, you know, I've been doing it since Johnny Cash died. You know, I just said, man, I'm going to wear a black shirt. That's all I ever wear on stage.
Johnny Cash was on amphetamines.
I know. God, he's such an advantage over me. But, you know, we played out at the lake, and God, it was hot. But it was at night, so it wasn't quite as bad. But the short-sleeve shirt is rare.
See, I played at, like, 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, you played
in
sunlight.
Right in the,
yeah,
right
heat
in the,
of the day.
Just the balls of it, man.
And people go out there, huh? Eat burgers, drink beer, they love it.
Not as many. It affects business.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a noticeable drop-off, but, I mean, they're still there. But, you know, the one of the worst things about it for me is – my guitar strings get rusted out.
Yeah, after they get every rusty show, the next day.
See, I can go up in, about 3 weeks ago, I changed strings for the first time in 4 months.
I mean, that's a true musician for you there, folks. Well, you guys changing strings before every show? Forget it, man. I haven't changed the strings on my Telecaster in like a year.
Yeah, I just, but I've
they're
had
all
to,
rusted out.
I had to change them again this week, and I have to keep changing them during the summer because I sweat.
Yeah,
and
just rust out.
And my guitar has just got a nice coating of sweat. And it's gross.
I love it. Yeah, it just gets filthy and nasty. Well, speaking of heat, speaking of summer, man, there has just been alarming, not real surprising from my view, man, concerts this summer, the normally big concert tour. Of course, it's always competitive, so many bands on the road. But, man, there have been some eye-popping cancellations out there. Christina Aguilera canceled her whole tour.
Limp Bizkit.
They canceled their tour?
Yeah, they canceled
it. I even read that our guy, Tom Petty, man, has had trouble selling dates. I couldn't believe that. I was like, dude. But you know what? His ticket prices are like twice as much as they were last time.
See, aren't they like 120 now?
Yeah, dude, we paid $60 to go to American Lions Center. They said he took a big guarantee. They said, man, Petty this year, unlike in years past, took a big guarantee. He probably knew it'd be tough. But tickets are expensive and
he went years and years and vowed to never have a concert ticket over $65.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his big deal, you know. I'm shocked.
He knows the government's been printing money. It's not worth what it used to be, man. Yeah. He's just like, hey, man, for $1, I want two, right?
Yeah, man.
I don't know.
Look, the levee's about to break.
Well, here's the rest of some of the other ones just real quick here. You had the first thing was the Dixie Chicks, Eagles and Keith Urban. Man, they shut down dates all over the East Coast.
Yeah.
I mean, California they sold, but, you know, the Eagles for a while, just hell freezes over, man. It was a cool thing that came back. Then they did another tour. They just tour every summer. It's just, they're just like Steve Miller out there or somebody.
And the tickets get more expensive
every
tour.
Every time. You're just like, dude, I paid $400 last year to see him. Now I got to go do it again.
Yeah.
And so they canceled a bunch of those dates. And then we're talking about, I played
Country Throwdown,
yeah. Man. Jack Ingram. Of course, he was lower on the bill. Who are the big guys on there? Montgomery Gentry,
Little Big Town, Ryan Bingham, Jack Ingram.
Yeah.
There was a smattering of others.
But they had like 15 dates or something, didn't they? I don't know.
I think they had like 35
or like
something.
A summer tour.
Yeah, it was a whole summer-long thing. It started like in May, I think, maybe. And
they just canceled the whole tour?
Yeah.
God, man. The only ones you hear selling well are the modern top of the chart people, you know, Lady Gaga. So those dates are selling out.
Yeah, she's selling out. I think that's the key.
What's that, Sal? Give us some perspective here. What's going on? Well, don't we like the Eagles?
I think
Petty, come on.
Yeah, but the problem with Eagles and with the Eagles and Tom Petty is everybody's already seen it.
Yeah, that's right.
And it keeps
and
getting
not that
more
long
expensive.
Ago. It was last year. I mean, it's just like
it
last
keeps getting more expensive. So eventually, it's just people are going to stop doing it.
Just supply and demand. Just like
and
you,
the know. Other side of that coin is, man, we live in a top 40. What have you done for me lately? World.
Yeah, that's right.
Montgomery Gentry and Little Big Town are good examples of this. They've had recent hits on the chart, but man, you're only as big as your current single. And when you don't have that current hit out on the charts, man, the music business is an ugly place.
It's because, fickle, yeah.
You know, it just doesn't exist for you when you go out there and you try to take a big guarantee and go out on this big tour and charge people $50, $60, $70, $100 to get in.
Right.
Man, you're just asking. On top of us being in a crap economy right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like
I'll tell you what, just to be perfectly honest, man, our numbers have been noticeably off here in the last couple months.
Yeah.
From other, man, we had some big shows. I feel like we always do better in the cold weather, like our Firehouse shows, Cypress Saloon.
There's less competition.
And Granada Theater, man, it's always like in December. You say like, man, we had a good night. I mean, but man, I always feel like the summer when there's this other stuff going on.
People
and the heat,
go on vacation.
It's just like, man,
you've
no
got
one's
all
around.
These, you've just, got Memorial always, Day, Labor Day, 4th of July.
So we pick up
festivals.
The counter is
other
we pick up some lake gig or something or some festival on a beach or something that kind of counteracts it. But it is hard, I think, to get people out to a dark, smoky bar on a hot Saturday night in July.
Well, and it doesn't get dark until 9:30,
yeah,
so people kind of go out later, or they don't go out at night like they do in the winter. They just kind of, you know, they do more evening and afternoon stuff. They go.
What do you think would happen? What do you think would happen? We played the Firehouse here tonight, and it was a great show, fun time. Not as big. We had a February show, really big for us, and last, you know, a summer date, you know, June, not as many, which is about what I expected. But you wonder, man. It was, and man, the Firehouse has had some recent shows, and a lot of other venues, man. I never hear of anybody doing just buku business here recently. Mm-hmm. There's a couple guys that always seem to do good, but you forget how many of us there are out there, you know. Just guys.
Too many.
Well, just, you know, Corey Morrow, whoever, they're all still out there playing dates, you know, and you do hear stories of like, dude, there was like 30 people there. I'm like, well, you've got to be kidding. Just like, yeah, dude, we were there. It was like, I'm not kidding. It was like 40 people for various guys. Maybe even some guys that used to sell
hundreds and maybe a thousand
tickets in some places. Of course, that's just the business I'm at. That's just our, you know, we talked about old Bad Blake from, I don't know, you know, from Crazy Heart. Or,
yeah.
I don't know. But do the ticket prices keep going up? I guess those guys get used to those big fat ticket prices and they don't want to go down. They're like, man, we're $15 in Houston or wherever.
And even in the little Texas music microcosm, and, you know, part of the problem, the economics of the situation, you got guys that 4 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, man, they're making X amount of dollars a night.
They're getting 600 people.
And booking agents don't lower the price.
Yeah.
So, you know, they may have had a huge single on the Texas music charts. They were doing well, whatever. But, man, they never come down off their price. Mm-hmm. And so these venues keep booking them because, you know, there's a handful of booking agents that run the whole deal. Say, hey, if you want this guy, you've got to take
this guy.
Plus
the venues know there's a handful of guys that are going to have a chance of really packing the place.
Yeah. So, I mean,
if you don't want the date, they'll go down the street.
I empathize with venues, man, because they're always rolling the dice. Hey, it's an expensive game to play.
It is.
It's a combination of, you know, I apologize to booking agents out there, but, man, you're in a fleece business sometimes.
There's no doubt,
dude. Agents go out there and they take their 10-15-20% off the top. They're not lowering the prices even when they and everyone else know that the act isn't worth it. The act isn't about to come down, you know. You always live at your peak.
You're
not gonna back off your price. And, man, it's just,
but you even wonder, here's my other question. Pricing is a big deal. Do you really think, maybe it would. I often wonder if we play a show at a venue and we go, we got X number of people in here and it's $10 to get in. I wonder, I go, man, if it was $5, would we have more people or would we not? Would it just kind of be
about
the same? That's a tough question. What would you think?
I experimented with this recently, early this year. We were doing really well in our shows in Fort Worth.
I mean,
better than we ever had. And the question came up, you know, well, let's try a little more expensive, makes more money. Well, we tried that, and we didn't go up much. We went up a little bit, and you know what? It hurt us.
Yeah.
And we went back down to $5. We set records the next three times we played after that. And I think, man, there's a fine line between those of us who are and those of us who aren't big time.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, there's just not very many big time people who can ask for a lot at the door and get it and sell the place out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're doing yourself a disservice.
The Eagles or whoever.
Yeah.
I mean, depending
on everyone
has their peak. I mean, there is a top of the market. You're like, $400 for the Eagles? I saw them 2 years ago. Screw that. You're not going to go for that.
Exactly.
Not those $50. You might go, I'll go. Sure.
And you figure out how much or how little people care to actually go in and see you. You know, at $10, we'll get 400 people in there.
Yeah.
At $20, we might get 60.
God, is it that?
And you're getting no walk-in traffic. You're losing every opportunity to get new people in to see you. Because, hey, that should be why you're playing live.
Right.
To generate new business.
Well, see, this is kind of coming to my point here. When we do go play a venue now, we're not playing for any new people. But, man, when we first started playing the surf club in Corpus, let's take an example, it was free when we played, or $3 or $4 or $5. And, man, people would just go there on Friday and Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm.
So you wanted to be the band up there to play in front of these hundreds of people who are all hanging around and drinking. Oh, who's the band? These guys are pretty good. That's how you built your career. But now when we go to a venue, you know, we're getting paid something. So there's a guarantee to cover. So the ticket gets up there about, you know, $8, $10 in most venues on a weekend night. So that keeps our crowd – I feel like we draw about the same, and you see the same faces, which is great. I love you all. But you're not getting, when we first started playing the Firehouse, there'd be 20 guys up front and knew all the words, and then there'd be 200 people just in there playing pool and stuff, because it was only like $5 to get in. And and we turned a lot of those people into fans eventually. But now we go back every 3 or 4 months in some of these markets, and it's just the same people. There's only a certain number of people in those markets that are going to consistently pay $10 and come see you. You know what? Don't you agree with that? I'm just kind of like, man, so I'm looking for ways to get in front of people who haven't seen us, but that's increasingly hard to do.
Yeah,
market isn't set up like that.
Yeah, that's gotten a lot harder to do. That's why I play the places I play.
Well, you play like Fred's, like a restaurant where there's no cover. You just get paid.
I get a percentage of overall sales there. When I get a lot of people to come see me, it works even better for me. And on top of that, they do huge business whether I'm there or not. Mm-hmm. So I have turned more people into fans by doing that one gig every Sunday than anything I've ever done. And, man, for a long time I got people going, hey, you're just a house band at Fred's. What happened to your career? Well, now everybody's like, how do I get that gig at Fred's?
Who says that? Who says that? Oh, I'm just kidding.
You mean name
blasphemy.
Names?
No.
But I think if you're – you should always be trying to generate new business, whether you're in the music business
or
whatever. And if you get to the point where you're just doing the same customers all the time, then either you're not going to be able to sustain that same group of people long term.
Yeah, there's no
doubt. You have to
no
keep
doubt.
New blood coming in. And I think that's where a lot of agents and other bands miss the boat. And hey, I talk to venue owners all the time too, and I'm always shocked. They go, yeah, that guy came in here, cost me $3,000 and drew 14 people.
Yeah, oh,
man,
all
it happens.
The time. Yeah.
All the guys who our average listener would go, yeah, he's famous, he's big time.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You would be shocked
at
how these guys get skunked. And the venue eats it, man.
Eat it. Let's I want to continue this into our second segment. Ticket pricing, man, is tough out there. None of us have any money, for crying out loud. Times are tough. How can we remedy this, South? I've got some ideas. I want to hear your input on it. Pricing and moving forward, new business for Kurt South, and hopefully new business for Phil Pritchett and the full band in our next segment. Stay tuned.
Get your words right here beside me. It does not matter what order they're in. Won't change what's inside me.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Do you feel yourself becoming smarter just by listening to this show? I hope so. I hope so. That's the intended result. You are not alone. Your mind is broadened. Yourself, your perspective enlightened. By myself, Phil Pritchett, my good friend Kurt South is joining me here today. The didactic duo. How you doing, South?
I'm great. I think we need to start handing out diplomas to people who listen to a certain number of podcasts. Yeah. You're learning so much.
You're able to just turn the show off and just hold your head high and walk around and just look at people like.
Put it on a resume.
Yeah,
I dropped out of college my freshman year.
I listen to the P2 Podcast, so if you really want to know what's going on, ask me.
I've got 64 episodes under my belt.
First-hand experience shared with me with
hire
no filter.
Me. I guarantee you'll go
absolutely.
Places.
Well, man, we're talking about the ailing. It's all over the press, man. Every superstar you've that we all know and love, and some that we despise, are out there struggling to sell tickets. Man, they're all hey, man, $100, $400. The Eagles, Keith Urban, oh gosh, Christina Aguilera. Did you lose tickets on that, South?
I thought she was a stripper now.
Oh, yeah, maybe she is. I don't know.
I thought she danced at Texas Cabaret or something.
Yeah, man, these bands that just, man, how many times has Bon Jovi been at the American Airlines Center over in Dallas? They've been here like four times in the last 5 years
and of
or
course,
something.
And they've
I'm
now been
like,
exposed as fleecing their fans and scamming
yeah,
them.
Yeah, scalping their own tickets. Now, was that an official deal?
Yes.
For those of y'all who don't know, there was a story that came out that Bon Jovi or someone in the organization, would buy those front row tickets and turn around and
resell them on the black market. Hey, John Bon Jovi.
The gig is up, man.
Yeah,
come on. Oh, man. Well,
he doesn't have enough money, Phil.
Hey, come man, on. You know what those guys, I say it all the time, why is that guy touring? He doesn't need the money. And what do we always say? Hey, he needs the money. He needs the money more than anybody. He's got 9 houses, 3 yachts, and illegitimate children worldwide. So, man, he's got a
private
jet on the road. Yeah. You know what, though? I don't need the money. So as soon as I get some, I'm going out. I'm cashing out and disappearing.
Oh, of course.
They're going to go, man, Phil had that big hit. Where'd he go? Just, dude, he bought a ranch in Colorado somewhere. No one ever saw him again. I mean, I'll show up every couple of years.
Last I saw him, he's at Motel 6 with a dress on. I don't know what happened to him.
What are you talking? You always make it some dark thing.
He had $500,000 in cash in his bra. I don't know what happened.
Oh, man, I hope it doesn't come to that. I really don't.
Hey, I will be there to rescue you. In a motel room in Waco. Will you come
I hope
get
our
me?
Fans followed up with Kurt South rescuing me out there in the woods, Marlin, Texas. My car broke down. Well, back to our topic here. Here is my question, and I want some feedback on there. Fans, listen to me out there. I know, God bless you all, you think it's worth $10 to come see me, but you know what? It's the same people every time, and that's just great. I'm trying to reach more people, though, you know? I want people to just to walk up to the club we're playing. Hey, you know, it's... And, man, I think that just means a lower ticket price. But I think it'd be a while to get the word out. That just, dude, Phil plays the Firehouse. It's $5. And, I mean, I think if you have, you know, 200 in there at 10, you might have 600 at 5. Or not. Or would it just still be the
you
same number of people?
Would
no one come?
My good friend Nate Krieger, who worked at Billy Bob's for a lot of years.
Yeah, I knew
now,
Nate. Works a big Nate
now,
backstage. Yeah.
He now works the door at the White Elephant.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I get all the good inside information from Nate on how ticket prices for all the bands that play there affect the overall turnout.
Yeah.
And... Man, it 100% across the board. When you start pushing that ticket price up, no matter who you are, you're just digging your grave.
And man,
and we've got the stats to back it up.
No
and
question.
We talk about it all the time. And you know, there's also the science of people would rather pay $10 than $7 because it's the one bill theory.
Uh-huh.
You know. If you just throw a 5, just throw a 10. He said the guys that really kill themselves are the ones that put $8 on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you're doomed to 40 people being paying. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
But if it's 5 or 10, 5 you have the best shot. 10 you better be somebody. Uh-huh. And, hey, you know, I played a gig a couple years ago with Bruce Robinson at the White Elephant.
Yeah.
It was like $18 to get in.
Yeah, that's expensive.
30 people paid
it. That's right.
30 people. You know, guy's written 3 number one hits, has been around for 15 years. And so it's just.
Man, here's a question that I often, and this is hard for me to swallow because I'm out there trying to make a living, you know. And you do have, if you play a venue, a small room that holds maybe 400 people. And you get, let's just say, you say, man, Phil, we pay Phil $1,000. It's a $10 ticket. And, hey, man, he's usually good for 100 people. I mean, he covers himself at the door, you know, right? We can pay him for that. And we get 100 people in there. Oh, well. And that's kind of maybe the realm we exist in some markets, let's just say. You start to think, man, how can we do a little better? How can we do a little better? And, man, you are in a tough spot at that point. A very, very difficult spot. I want everyone to follow me on this. You got 10 at the door. You got 100 showing up roughly every time. Now, if it's homecoming weekend, hey, you might have 200, you know? And, man, if it's spring break, you might have 48. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you might get really screwed. But it's always $10, okay? But it would seem to me that you just can't raise that ticket price until you're selling 400 tickets at $10. There's no more. The supply is now exceeded.
It's all that there is.
You just go, dude, people just can't get in. So how do we... We can move venues, or you raise the price just a little. Man, it went to 12. You know, we're maxed out. But no one does that. These bands go, man, we've been playing there for $800 per year. And I'm like, yeah, and that's all you're worth in that room. Until you can't get in the place, can you raise tickets? So my question is, if you're just hovering right there, if you said, look, we're instead of charging 10 and having 100, we're going to charge 5. What happens?
Says you get more people
do
in
you
there.
Risking just
and
$5?
Look, I would think the venue would go, hey, we're still going to give you a regular guarantee. But, yeah, you know, you're charging half the price. We ought to get twice the people in here. And
man, I wonder if that's because a lot of guys come in, never go down your ticket price, never go down your ticket price, never, no retreat, no surrender. And man, I understand that, but that's kind of way up in the echelons, man. Maybe those big pro guys don't want to do that. But man, I just like we're talking about
the
here,
ones who are getting their tours canceled. Yeah, they're the ones who don't want to do that.
They have not backed off their ticket price. They have not backed off. But you're right, dude. And there's some guys, I'm not going to name names in this Texas music deal, that are famous for getting big guarantees. And
not
every
delivering.
Show, they just go, dude, the bar guy is just sitting there going, man, he's on the cover of every magazine, he's a number one hit. I just thought, hey, you know, for 10 grand, this place is going to be packed. Man, we had 125 people pay 18 bucks. They just get wiped out, dude. Yep. The best deal I ever had starting out, and the only bar I could ever convince to do this was Fitzwillie's in College Station when I first started playing in College Station.
Call us, Junior.
Call us. Is he still there?
Still there.
Is he?
Still there.
Junior, we love you. Running the door. Here was their deal. They had us that cool patio out there. I brought the PA. I brought everything. I just go, look, man, give us some food. And here was and the deal was this. Phil, come play in the bar. You do all the work. We'll give you $300. I had to bring the PA, pay the band, everything. I'm like, okay. They said, in addition to that, we'll charge $1 or $2 at the door, and we'll give you 100% of the door. So the deal was literally $300 plus the door. Mm-hmm. And then the door was just nuts. It was like $2, which was a bargain for all the kids down there. And then I had somewhat of a cost cover thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a little more like Fred's for you,
right,
but with some small cover also. There was like a bonus structure built in just having people go in there. And dude, we routinely would just pack that deal so that you couldn't get in there. And, you know, it could maybe hold 100 something people through the night, 150, mm-hmm. 200 people through. So, I mean, we might play there and man, here's your 300, Phil. So the bar's only in for $300. And it's nothing, you know, the places, their bar sales, food sales are through the roof. They pay me $300 out of that. Then Junior's over there with a pile of cash. Hey, man, here's another $400.
Yeah.
So I'm putting $700 in my pocket and driving home. And man, everyone got paid. No one felt like the bar wasn't putting a lot of chips on it. They were only in for $300. The fans were only coming in for $2. My nut was covered. I only had two guys in my band. $300, I kind of covered maybe what I was paying for them and gas if nobody showed up. I mean, the leverage was all spread out. And if people were there, the bar sales were huge. The bar has invested $300. They have a huge night. And then I say, man, I just drove here, and we had people there, so I got $700. They didn't take any of my merch sales. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we might do a couple hundred or something in merch on that, on top of that. And it was always our best gig, our most profitable thing. And people were seeing us. They go, man, but your ticket was $2. How can that be profitable? I'm like, dude, it was just spread out. But I could never convince another bar to do that. They wanted to just give us a $500 guarantee plus 80% after $2,000. I'm just like, eight after $2,000? Well, we got our expenses. Then they put like a $12 ticket on the door.
So if I sell the place out, I get $700.
Dude, we played a House of Blues upstairs in Dallas. I hope I don't talk my way out of a House of Blues. But you know what? So they have, I mean, it was, yeah, I'm not going to go into all the details of the deal, but it was something like $12 or $15 to go see us in the small room. We have like 300 people in there, and they just give me a sheet at the end of the night where they prove mathematically that they owe me like $280. And I'm just like, what the hell is this? Now, I knew what I was getting into, but it was one of those gigs like, hey, man, it's a great contact. You know, we'll get in there. We'll knock it out. We'll get our foot in the House of Blues. And I was all excited. We went there.
You got the foot.
We went there. We played a great show. It was fun. But I'm just saying, the room was full, and you don't make any money. I'm just like, dude, I would rather go to Fitzwillie's and make money. We'd rather play there than House of Blues. I'm like, would you rather get $200 and be broke Monday morning, or would you rather have $1,200? Now, I don't mean I'm all about the money, but I'm just playing my set. I don't care where it is. I'll play on the beach somewhere. I don't care if I've got some curtains and all. You know what I'm saying? I just go, man, I gotta
You've gotta
I got
make
a family.
Money.
I gotta make money. I just
yeah,
so
it,
I'd rather go play somewhere where they're like, hey, man, we'll just give you the whole door. So at least where I know what I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
But those big venues, those corporate venues like that, very difficult to figure out how to make
Look,
money.
When you're ready to play those big venues like that and actually make money,
yeah,
they'll come running to you with the deal. Until then, playing them, you're pretty much going to be doing it for charity.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. There's, especially, you know, in the little small rooms, they all have the smart.
Yeah.
If you're playing in there, you're basically volunteering your time so that they can have some bar sales. Mm-hmm. That's all you're doing. You're a beer salesman for them.
That's right.
You might as well, you know, go work for Budweiser.
It does look cool though, man, on your
concert
calendar.
It does, but it
plus people think, man, he plays the House of Blues, he's awesome, you know. But what's that worth? And I've had that for a long time, and I do think that does lead to some perception. You know, maybe we get a festival, they think, oh, Phil, kind of like all these guys that break people we were talking about that, hey, man, I thought he was huge. I mean, I think in some way, some marketing, difficult to quantify thing, there's some value.
See, I disagree.
It. You don't think so?
Anybody can get a gig at the House of Blues if you.
Man, you kind of can.
I totally disagree with that. Man, look, there's so many bands, so many venues. Anyone can now play Billy Bob's, Granada Theater, House of Blues, if you know the guy to talk to.
Yeah.
It's all a matter, and it's not a reflection on how good you are.
And here's
how
the other dirty
fans
secret
you have.
Here's the other dirty secret I'm going to tell you. The best show you're going to play in that venue, the very best show, is probably the first time you play there. And
That's it.
Because that's the big deal. You go out on your website, oh my gosh, listen up, fans. All my relatives and friends who haven't really come see me play yet, because they're like, ah, what the hell is he doing with his life? Guess what? We're playing the House of Blues. We're playing the Granada Theater. We're playing Billy Bob's. And man, we're the opening act. But dude, you show up there, and man, I've been on both sides of this. I've been the opening band where everybody goes, and I've also been the quote-unquote headliner where the opener
brings all the people.
It's the biggest show they've ever played. And so they've got 300 people out there, and I've got 150.
Yep.
Like, hell, we blew Phil Pritchett off the stage. And I'm just like, well, I mean, I've played here for 10 years. So, yeah, I mean, we always draw somewhere between 100 and 200 or something. Well, man, some opening band will come, and they'll have 300. The first time. Once. Then they get another gig. The bar says, man, this guy's got some fans. Then they book them. 2 months later,
nobody.
We want a headliner, and they all went, well, we saw him last week.
It's just like all the bands.
It's just that's what happens over and over and over and over. And that's what I see just always happening. There's always a flash of turnout, of venue, of ticket sales, and then it just goes away. And and who is left standing after 5 or 10 years that can still draw something? You know, it starts to be pretty
rare.
There
aren't many people who can. There really aren't. And one thing you have to remember as just a fan, as a layperson outside looking in, that guys you hear on the radio, see on magazine covers, look at their schedule, it's just filled with dates. Most of them don't draw that many people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, Robert Earl Keen had a quote, you'll hear yourself in the radio, read about yourself in the newspaper.
People come up to you on the street.
And you will still be broke.
Oh, man. There's no question. He always said, I remember reading that, maybe that same interview, he just goes, man, the money is just the last thing that comes. And it's probably when you're in your 40s. Seriously. I mean, it's just, there's really no, I mean, because there's so much else you have to do, so many building blocks you have to put out there. And it's true, man. How to get people to come see you live is just it's very rare. It's very, very difficult. And man, just because you have hits and stuff doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. I mean, how big is Christina Aguilera? I mean, how many hits she has? She's gone to Saturday Night Live and Letterman, and she's had successful tours in the past, but maybe five or 6 years ago. And now, man, you're right. It's just, what have you done for me lately? You know.
Well,
and that's a different game than the Keenan guys are playing.
I bet I have more people who. If you asked them, are you a fan of Curt South? I have more people who would say yes and who own my music that have never seen me live than I do people who have seen me live.
Mm-hmm.
I get emails regularly from people all over.
Yeah.
You know, man, we own all your stuff. We love you. Just to let you know, we've got kids and married.
Yeah.
We don't go out, so we won't ever make it to a show.
Yeah.
But good luck. Hope it's going well. I get a lot of emails like that.
Right.
And, man, there are just a lot of people that don't go to shows.
Yeah.
They just
don't.
Hey, I don't.
I got a free ticket to Petty, or I wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have spent that money and sat in the upper deck. No. I mean, it was a fun time. Someone had a ticket. Hey, man, let's go. Come on, man.
I do not go to concert. My days of doing that are over. If I'm not getting paid to play somewhere, I don't go out.
God, that's inspiring.
I am in the robe holding the shotgun. I just don't.
In the robe, toting the wine around the house, peering out the blinds. Kurt South, neighborhood watchman.
By the way, I had to pull a trigger on a guy this week.
Oh, come on. Pull that. What are you talking about? You just shoot him in the leg?
He said rock salt in there.
Yeah, a little rock salt. Yeah.
He went to patient first or care now. He's probably all right.
He's all right. Well, man, coming up in our vault section, we're going to shift gears. Are you ready for this, folks? Because, man, let me tell you what. I got younger guys in the band. The great Stu and Blue. Love him to death.
Overrated.
So great. Nah, underrated. And anytime this next band comes up, they kind of look at me like, dude, what? But man, I was young in the 80s, South. I grew up worshiping at the feet of Edward Van Halen. You too?
Absolutely.
In the vault. I don't even know what record we're going to do. One of them.
1984,
I'm
going to
explain the recent injustice that Eddie Van Halen has suffered in the press, and we're going to set it all straight. So get ready and turn it up in the vault, Van Halen, next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting to you from Trinidad World Recording Studio. Come record here at the studio. 817-733-5256. And download all those Pritchett records, man. P2Tunes.com. Just $4 for each record, including Alive Alone, a live acoustic album I did recently. It's only available at p2tunes.com. It got like 25, 26 songs for $4. Just go get it. Click it. You got it.
Sounds like a creepy album.
It does. Alive Alone. That's right. We have Phil Comes Alive back in the day. Now just Alive Alone. It's just me. It's so clever, isn't it? Oh, man.
Oh,
I just
wow.
Outsmart myself here. Well, thanks for joining us, folks. Love it that you're listening to us out there. Well, man, good grief. I'm always defending my heavy metal past. You know, when I came up in the 80s as a kid, we didn't have all these whatever D-bag bands you got out there. We had...
Wow.
We had, to use one of your favorite terms, man, yes, we had hair metal and Poison and all that kind of stuff. But man, rock and roll, I mean... It really all started with me learning how to play the guitar in about 6th or 7th grade. That was about 84, 85, whatever that was. And man, the taste du jour, man, was just Van Halen. They were just the ultimate in rock and roll spectacle entertainment.
No
irreverent
doubt.
Just
drunk.
Loving good times. Just the cigarette. Eddie Van Halen, man, just the cigarette smoldering in his mouth. Shirtless. Playing blazing fast leads. And man, at that time, and I was asking you earlier about this in the pre-production, you know, you always had the lists, man, the lists, the greatest guitar players of all time. Of course, you always had like Clapton up there, Jeff Beck, Hendrix, you know. And man, didn't like Eddie Van Halen was just the fastest gun in the West. I mean, he was
always
just
the top 10.
And
every time.
A few years ago, Rolling Stone has the top 100 guitarists of all time or something.
Horrible publication.
Yeah.
For the
and, man, I look on there. John Mayer's like number 22 or something. I'm just like,
Hold on.
Yeah.
Stop that. I'm cutting myself.
Put that razor blade away.
Hold on.
Put the noose away. What are you doing?
Hold on.
Kurt Stout is just... Stop it.
I'm punching myself.
Stop
Ow.
It. Ow. Stop. Oh, man. I didn't know John Mayer had that kind of reaction to you. Well, no, they had like Jack White.
He's the Elton John of
Jack
guitar.
White was like number 10.
Played better than Jack White, and I'm a Jack White
Kurt
fan.
Cobain was like number 7. I'm like, as a guitar, like a guitar player, how could you? So who's down the list at number 70? Not 7, 70 is a little thumbnail picture of Eddie Van Halen and his funky guitar. Like, oh yeah, man, he was kind of the king of hair metal there for a while, and they just move right on to who. I'm just like, whoa, 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 whoa.
First of all, whoa. They were not hair metal. They were not hair metal. There is a distinction to be made here.
All right, start with it.
First of all...
Let me give you my dilemma. The younger guys younger than me and you, who make, you know, still like 30 years old, man, they didn't even get into like middle school, high school. There was like Van Hagar, you know,
I'm a fan of Van Halen.
Well, they were doing experiments with Gary Cherone, for God's
sake.
Now,
that's when it
started.
Van
Halen was a joke in the poke. To them in the post David Lee Roth era. So they missed the whole Roth era. But man, that was my just heyday. So I'm always trying to draw their attention to their old records, and I'm always defending them a little bit, and it's tough to do. So make your case for Van Halen.
First of all, their first record came out in what,
78? Yeah.
78?
Right there, yeah.
All right. Hair metal wasn't even around then, okay?
No, you just had we all remember the 70s, right? What you had? Rumors you had? What else was around at the end of the 70s?
Not a lot outside of disco.
See, disco, that's right. That's what disco had come in big.
Disco killed
ABBA,
rock and roll.
All that stuff.
So, yeah, you had the Bee Gees and all that
crap.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that was Streisand stuff. And
Van Halen comes out, which they weren't quite heavy metal. I mean, heavy metal really wasn't a term necessarily then, probably. I mean,
Black Sabbath was around.
Yeah, you had Black Sabbath and Motorhead and some of those bands.
Right, right.
But Van Halen, they were just the Rolling Stones, that attitude, that swagger, that lifestyle.
Oh, man, yeah.
But just turned up twice as loud and just crazier.
Yeah.
I mean, David Lee Roth was just wearing leather underpants on stage, drinking gallon jugs of whiskey.
Covered in, like, Christmas lights.
Yeah, Eddie Van Halen's just emaciated. He looks like he just got done with a cocaine buffet. And, I mean, it was a blast right into your forehead. It's something that we hadn't seen in a while.
Dude, and the whole thing was, if you look at all those great guitar players we know and love, everybody's, oh, Robert Johnson, man, he'd set the blues tones and... You know, Hendrix and Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton. All those guys are blues players. They're blues players. Led Zeppelin, they're all
even
just...
Even Jeff Beck was a blues
They're all blues,
player.
Man. They're playing blues scales, you know? But, man, when Jimi Hendrix came along in the late 60s, man, just machine gun and all... Man, that was mind-blowing stuff because you had the blues, and then all of a sudden here's Hendrix, and no one argues Hendrix's place in history, right? I mean, he's just, man, he was... There was just, he was a guy that came along at the right time, and then it just, as Eric Clapton said, it could have been anybody, but it had to be him. It was Jimi Hendrix. And then that was late 60s, and man, then he went another 10 years of the 70s and guitars and guys, and there are people everywhere. And man, I would just argue that there was not a sonic boom, an atomic blast of different guitar, tone, sound, speed, everything.
A whole different approach to it.
I mean, the first album, Eruption, instrumental, was Eddie Van Halen. I mean, it was a classical music piece played on an electric guitar.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing.
Well,
I mean,
there
was just nothing that came before it that even compared to it. Just like Hendrix, you go, well, man, he came after Clapton. And you're like, I know, man, but you don't even know where he got these ideas. You're just like, where did he hear this? And, man, I would argue that Eddie Van Halen, I'm not saying he's as great as Jimi Hendrix, but, man, that was a watershed event for rock guitar. I mean, he and Hendrix, I don't even know who else you'd put as far as just absolutely changing the way the guitar is played.
We talked about Jeff Beck recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Beck's one of those guys who's in the upper elite group that includes Beck himself, Eddie Van Halen, and Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And, man, other than that, I think those are just the top. They're guys who have revolutionized the instrument. Eddie Van Halen was trained as a classical pianist and also a cello player.
Yeah, he was a drummer originally.
Drummer,
and his brother Alex, the drummer of Van Halen, was the guitar player. Yeah, yeah.
But Eddie Van Halen's approach, his scales, the runs he did, the way his melodic sense all came from classical music. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Eruption, it sounds like it could be played on a chamber quartet.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he brought a classical music approach to the way the guitar is played. No one has ever done that, or at least done it with the impact that he did.
Right.
And man, all the Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing spawned all those wannabe guitar players
that became hair metal. And man, maybe that's why, maybe we blame him for that. We're kind of, man, he was the start of all that garbage we hated. And because they were all playing like him and they're doing all the finger tapping and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it did get out of hand, and it did get cheesy, and it did get corny. But, man, there's just no denying his purpose and his impact and his innovation, man. He made those guitars. He rewired all of his amps. He was constantly woodshedding it, man. Eddie practicing. He famously, I mean, that Kramer guitar he had, it was like a Kramer neck, mm-hmm. and then he didn't know anything about building a guitar, but he got his own pickup and he did all the soldering and stuff. He didn't know how to do any of that. Had one knob and he didn't have anything to hold the pickup in there, so he got some gummy bears and just packed them in there to hold the pickup in the guitar. And to raise the strings, he had like a quarter under the bridge.
Yeah.
And all this kind of funky stuff, but it all added up to what he called the brown sound. The brown mm-hmm. sound. I think he had a Marshall Plexi head, and that's what he used. And just, man, it was just the tone was unbelievable. And his speed and his skill was undeniable. And it was, and man, then they had all these hilarious songs. He did all those great Kinks covers on Diver Down. Where Have All the Good Times Gone?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people think Girl, You Really Got Me Now is a Van Halen song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an old Kinks song. Man, they just made everything they touched, they made their own. Pretty Woman. I mean, their rendition of Pretty Woman is as famous as Roy Orbison's, maybe more so in some circles. And
Ice Cream Man, and they took an old blues standard and just...
Stop it with a passing by. It was just so fun. It was so.
It's what rock and roll is supposed to be.
Oh my!
At least to us in that time and that place, that's what it was.
We were 13 years old, and you just looked at that picture of just sweaty Eddie Van Halen with the cigarette, and listened to his. I mean, you just thought, dude, this guy moves mountains. This guy topples empires.
There have been
honest to goodness. I mean, you didn't look at Robert Cray like that. I know he's a great player. Okay, I mean, or your average blues guy with some good licks. It was just like, I know, man, but what? I mean, dude, Van Halen was like, they were like superheroes. It was just
they
like all of a sudden there was like Aquaman and, you know.
Hey, when I was 12 or 13, there was not any music in my life that I can think that moved me and pushed me to the brink like Van Halen.
Yeah.
That just made me want to get up and just, I don't know, I didn't know what to do with it. I just thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. I thought that just the visual of them was just as great. And you have
that's the other thing. The show. Man, Eddie's playing all these licks, and then he's just constantly jumping, just doing big splits in the air, sliding across the stage on his knees. And, man, there's not a lot of bands today. Like, when you see Montgomery Gentry do it, it looks so cheesy. It just looks so contrived.
Well, they suck.
Or whoever. I'm just saying these country guys try to rock out.
Yeah.
But Eddie was actually delivering killer licks and stuff. Smoking, just with a bottle of Jack Daniels on his amp, and just kicking ass. And I just don't. They've become such a joke. Like, why did you like Van Halen, man? They're so silly, or they're so. I'm just like, dude. They're like, I get offended. I'm like, you know what, man? I'm gonna go on a limb and say they're probably the most badass rock and roll FU band. Yeah, an innovative guitar thing that maybe ever has come along in my lifetime.
Well,
I would say that.
No doubt. I'm right there with you. It always drives me nuts.
I'm preaching to the choir. But you don't hear him talked about as much anymore.
No, you don't. Well, you know, Eddie's problems with substance abuse and all that.
Yeah, he got divorced. Guy's been in rehab and has had some terrible reunion gigs where he falls asleep on stage. And it's really
got
a sad
son,
thing.
His 17-year-old son playing bass for him now. It's not Van Halen anymore.
Yeah.
It's but, you know, I read a – who was the – I think it was Jerry Cantrell.
Yeah,
Alice in Chains.
Alice in Chains, yeah.
I think he opened up some shows with his band for Van Halen.
Yeah. Recently, or like in the 90s?
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was like the Jerry Cantrell band or something after Alice in Chains had initially broken up. And he said, man, Eddie was at my sound check one day and walked out on stage. It was real cool. He was just hanging out and asked to play my guitar through my amp. And it was a Guitar Geek magazine.
Right.
So, of course, the guy was like, man, what was it like having Eddie play through your rig? You know, what did it sound like? It sounded like Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
He said, that guy can take any guitar through any amp, and you absolutely 100% know who it is playing the guitar.
No doubt.
And that, my friends, is the signature of Van Halen, because nobody else on this earth plays drums like Alex Van Halen.
Yeah.
I can hear those drums. I can hear them, and immediately I go, that's Alex Van Halen. And even their bass player, who everyone always agreed sucked.
Yeah.
The great Michael Anthony played a Jack Daniels bass.
He always treated the audience to a 30-minute Jack Daniels.
One-note bass solo.
He'd play a bass solo for 30 minutes, rolling around stage until an entire fifth of Jack Daniels had been consumed.
Yeah.
Then the show would carry on.
But
that was part of the
even
part
him,
of the show.
You could listen to his subpar bass playing.
Yeah.
And just, man, that's Michael Anthony.
And he was a hell of a backup singer.
Oh,
all those
yeah.
high backup singers.
Real high.
Beautiful girls. I mean, you know, he sang all that stuff. Man, they really were. There's a lot of great stories about him starting out. Eddie had all that technique, man, all the hammer on where he'd play. Gosh, if you're just sitting there like going, huh, what? Just go to YouTube, man, and indulge yourself. When they started playing clubs in L.A., they would famously not put on all their stage clothes. They'd put on T-shirts and pull hats down and act like they were the road crew. They'd go set up all the amps and everything and act like they were. And then they'd go backstage and rip off their shirt, and they'd have their overalls or whatever the hell they had on. Then they'd come out, and I mean, they just did this show, you know. They were just doing the splits and playing. But Eddie would turn his back to the audience a lot and do his solos because he didn't want people stealing what he was doing, you know. And like, I mean, how the hell is he playing that fast? You know, and he would turn his back and he'd hunch over and play, and he wouldn't show anybody what he was doing. And man, there's just a you talk about just some mystique about how he did it. How he played, how he made it sound, his guitars, his amps. Eddie Van Halen, dude. It just doesn't get any more fascinating than that. And you know, there's just very few guys like Hendrix that sonically, of course, everyone's got the technique. There's guys out there who can play scales and write songs. That's all a huge part of it. But just the sonics of it is just such another plane.
And he was just the first to do
it. He was the
nobody else
first to do it. I mean, I know he drew from influences, obviously influenced by Jeff Beck and other, you know, Sabbath and stuff. But he just brought it into something that we'd never heard and really haven't heard since, man. And he's just been copied by so many people the world over, man.
You know, Mick Mars from Motley Crue, CC
doing hammer-ons
from Poison.
Yeah, just Yngwie Malmsteen, all those guys,
man,
all the shredders, man. Steve Vai.
They all took it from Eddie Van Halen.
No
and
question,
they all
dude.
Will proudly admit.
Oh, no question.
Eddie
no
is the freaking king.
He is the king, dude.
So screw all the hair,
man.
Van Halen's not in there.
Some people might know all the guitar playing in the solo Michael Jackson's Beat It, very favorite song.
Just
Eddie Van Halen playing on that, man.
Yep.
So Edward Van Halen, man, I still remember that year I was going to a summer camp and Michael Jackson was playing. This is the Victory Tour with 84 or 5 or something at Texas Stadium, the now late Texas Stadium. And the next night, Eddie and Van Halen on the 1984 tour, the last tour with Roth, were playing the now deceased Reunion Arena in Dallas. God, how old does that make me? For crying, the venues aren't even there anymore. The bands.
74.
Yeah, right. But I knew friends going to one or both of those shows. This was back when a show ticket was about $20. You know, you just went to the gig and bought a T-shirt, right? But I was going to camp anyway. I said, man, I'll just see y'all up there. And, man, I've lived to regret that. You know, I just go, man, that was the last tour with Roth.
Well, didn't Michael Jackson?
Jackson's, yeah, well, then Eddie went to Jackson's show. He came out for Beat It. I guess he got there a day early. You know, so he comes out and just doesn't. They're like, oh, man, then Eddie comes out with Michael Jackson, his show, the next night or whatever it was. I was just like, no. I was like, well, I'll catch them all the next time through. But then, man, if you really look at it, that was the absolute peak of Michael Jackson and the absolute peak of Eddie Van Halen of Van Halen.
Right
in my hometown of Dallas, two forces collided, two of their most seminal tours, just at their best. And everybody said, man, they're great shows and everything. But sadly, you know, that was the end of an era, man. But man, 70, come on, Rolling Stone. And, you know, not that I care what you think or ever read anything about you anymore.
It's a crap mag anyway.
70, the 70th best guitar player.
I'm sorry. Have we loved Kurt Cobain enough to put him anywhere near the... I can play better.
Dude, if Eddie
Van
Halen would have died tragically 10 years ago, he'd be number one.
He'd
Don't
be
you think?
Yes.
Yeah, he'd be
doubt,
way up there.
Dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the whole Cobain thing, let's stop it. Please.
Yeah, we all love it. But
he was great in that little Polaroid snapshot of time, but come on.
Yeah. Edward Van Halen moved mountains, my friend.
Call us, Eddie. You know
Eddie,
you love us.
Come on the show. Come on the show, Edward. Edward, show us how you do it. Well, that has been our show for today. Oh, man, Texas music fans everywhere. What's Phil talking about? Van Halen reliving his 80s glories days on my time? Oh, welcome to my world.
Damn right.
I hope you go back and get Van Halen 1, 2, Women and Children First.
Hey, get Diver Down.
Fair warning, Diver Down in 1984. There's six of them?
Yeah.
Six with David Lee Roth, yeah.
Hey, 5150 with Van Hagar is not bad.
Yeah, there's good songs. There's good songs on there, absolutely.
It's got what it takes, so tell me why can't this be love straight from the heart.
Oh, Kurt South doing Van
Hagar.
There
you go.
The best thing they ever did, though, is they didn't call it Van Hagar.
Oh, at least they did.
They almost did.
They almost did.
Well, that is our show for this week. Kurt South has been here. Thanks for being here. South,
all right.
The didactic duo, coming to you, enlightening your musical life. Call us 817-733-5256 to book Phil Pritchett and the full band, or to have me book Kurt South for you. I'll take a little fee, but I'll bring him to your house to play. Hey, we don't want to play these bars late at night. Come on, y'all. Get the party together. Get the house concert together, the barbecue in the backyard, the ranch party, and call us. We'll roll down and rock it to the end. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Phil here on the P2 Podcast. Enjoy your week. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Take care.
Dedicate one to the lady. Summertime sip, babe. Need something to keep you cool. I'm now summertime sip, babe. Need something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though. Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is. I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Oh, my, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I got to put my banana Dixie cups. All flavors and push-ups, too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on one more. Well, I'm usually passing by just about 11 o'clock. I never stop. I'm usually passing by just around 11 o'clock. And if you let me cool you one time, you'll be my regular stop. All right, boys. I'm putting my banana Dixie cups. Oh, flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Yes. I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Satisfied.